For Lyman Ag Supply in Lyman, Iowa, and the Family Vision Center in greater downtown Atlantic, this is Bob Evensee along with Grant Jelly, the conservation officer for Cass and Adair Counties, on this morning's conservation report. Good morning, Grant.
Good morning.
You're really enjoying this kind of weather. You southern Missourians kind of whimper a lot.
Yeah, I tell you what, I don't know if there's many people that can get used to this sort of thing when it's 70 one week and snow the next, so I guess that's Midwest weather for you.
Yeah, well, it's not boring.
No.
I can say that for
sure. Don't know whether to get the snow shovel out or the lawnmower. So.
We got quite a lot to talk about today. Let's start out with fishing. Some guys are wetting the line already, although maybe with the cold weather, not as much as usual.
Yeah, they are. On some of the warmer days, we're starting to see a few people out hitting the local lakes and ponds. And I talked to a gentleman the other day fishing Lake Anita. He told me that the water temp was 45 degrees, and which is probably a little bit chillier than some of the other lakes because Anita tend to hold ice a little bit longer this year. But he was catching some largemouth bass, and you know, seen a few anglers out there who are starting to pick up crappie. Those are going to be, you know, we predict it'll be another good spring for Anita. We've got a real good panfish fishery in there, and the guy I watched fish for bass, I mean, he caught two or three of them in the 15 minutes I was there with him. So fish are starting to pick up, but it's probably going to take a few more of these sunny, warmer days to get them really going.
He didn't get absent-minded and catch one over the limit while you were standing there, did he?
No, he didn't do that, but it might be a good time to remind people to check the dates on your fishing licenses. I run into people every year who believe that, you know, it's good from the date you purchase it until that year, that time the following year, and that's simply not the case. They run through January 10th of each year. So if you've purchased one last year late last year and assume it's still good, maybe pull it out of your wallet and take a look at it to make sure it's good to go before you hit the waters.
Mm-hmm. Good advice, you bet. One thing coming up as we get into spring, people like to train dogs any time of year, but some of the wildlife areas are going to be a no-no very shortly.
They are, beginning March 15th, and that'll run all the way through July 15th. We don't allow dogs to be trained out on wildlife management areas. And the reason for that, obviously, is because of the upland nesting species. And you know, everything is either laying eggs or giving birth in the spring. So we'd like to give those critters a chance to kind of not be burdened by dogs that are being trained. But, yeah, just keep that in mind if you're going to head out there. The only place that you can do that is in a designated dog training area, which we don't really have any of those here locally. So, you know, get on the internet and look for those locations, or, you know, you can obviously always do that on private land if you're fortunate enough to have someone that allows you to do that or own your own property.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think the only dog training area I know of is up at Brushy Creek. That's kind of a long ways to haul.
Long ways to let your dog run, you bet.
Okay. Something coming out, and it's getting to be a big deal. People are concerned about our monarch butterflies, and rightfully they should be because they are on the decline. They're losing a lot of habitat like everything else. So the DNR has come up with Iowa State and have created a bird and butterfly package that's available now. Pretty good price on it. There's a whole lot of plants come with that, and you can get the information off of the internet. But the thing I liked about it, there was a couple of things. Choke cherry, that's kind of a no-brainer. There's
sure.
a lot of good fruit on there. But tell me about the hackberries.
Well, yeah, we kind of wondered about that species. And hackberry, I think a lot of farmers have typically thought of the hackberry as a nuisance tree. They, you know, you tend to find it growing in fence rows, which we don't have many of those anymore, but it was kind of a fence row or a farmstead type of tree. And they've got a real rough bark, and they do have berries on them, so they benefit not only butterflies, but you know, birds and even squirrels on occasion will benefit from the fruit that they produce. So not the most royal of trees, I guess you would say, that we have here in Iowa, but Nonetheless, they do provide some good benefits to butterflies, and you know butterflies have been a huge topic in conservation world over the last several years, especially the monarchs. And you know, obviously, they kind of contribute the lack of monarchs nowadays to the lack of their number one food source, milkweed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, with ditches being sprayed or mowed, or sometimes you know areas that typically were a milkweed type area being converted to farmland or housing or you name it, it's really kind of been an issue for monarchs. So, you know, anytime that we can plant another type of species that benefits the monarchs or any other butterflies, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. You can identify butterflies by sound, or do you have to be able to look at them?
By wing flutter, actually. I'm that good.
I see. Okay, sounds good to me. That hackberry tree, you plant one of them, it's going to be around forever. I don't think anything attacks them. Like you said, they're not the prettiest thing in the world.
Nope.
They do have a fruit on them that's edible. I did not know that until I was reading some information earlier this week.
Yeah. The wood on them, you know, if anybody's ever cut one up and tried to use it for firewood, they're almost impossible to split. It's so tightly wound and just you can't hardly get a splitting maul through them. But good to know that they do benefit some other species besides, you know, deer and turkey that we usually think of.
You bet. Let's talk about the deer harvest. The numbers are out and computed down in the greater office in Des Moines. Pretty good week or season, down from last year, but on average, not bad.
Yep, not bad. It was down just a little bit, around 3,000 deer, fewer than 2015. But in 2016, hunters harvested 101,397 deer here in Iowa. So, you know, that's nothing to be ashamed of. Those are respectable numbers. Locally here, we had numbers that were real comparable, if not lower by just a few deer than we did in 2015. So no major changes here locally. Got an email a couple weeks ago, and they propose the antlerless quotas each year about this time. And we're not going to see any changes we haven't been proposed any changes for antlerless tag availability in Cass or Adair County, so that's good. Some of the counties where they may be increasing the quotas is Madison. That's about our nearest one, and they're going to bump that up a couple hundred antlerless deer quotas. So, you know, again, I probably get sick of hearing me preach about this, but that's why we really stress how important it is for people to register their deer after they harvest mm-hmm. them. Without that information, it's a guess. And, you know, if we get those numbers and we can use them on an annual basis and we suspect that they're an accurate number, that really helps in setting quotas for the following year. You know, maybe an increase in them, maybe a decrease in them. But if you don't report your deer, we don't know how many were harvested, and it could lead to a bump in license or tags for the following year, which could really be harmful to the local herds. So mm-hmm. important to make sure that you report your deer and turkeys after the harvest.
You bet. I think most of that drop was attributed to the early muzzleloader and the youth season and those early ones, because it was so warm and everything. They were down quite a bit.
They were, yeah. That comprises most of the shortage that we saw on harvest as compared to last year. And like you said, the weather, especially the early muzzleloader season. And, you know, hunters kind of can expect the early muzzleloader season to be warm. You know, it's in October. So, but when they were as warm as they were last year, it really affects deer movement. And it really affects hunters even wanting to go out there and sit in the heat or battle bugs. That's kind of, I think, why we're starting to see more popularity in our late muzzleloader season, because the weather is typically how Iowa's supposed to be, and cold and snowy, though it hasn't been this year, but that's kind of what they grow to expect. And, you know, that early muzzleloader season can really be a gamble weather-wise, so you never know what to expect in early fall like that.
Mm-hmm. The deer herd has been a real success story from the very beginning. You weren't around, of course, and probably weren't even born yet back in the 50s. There was only about two or three deer herds in the state of Iowa. One was over around Avoca, mm-hmm. and they started hunting, and those got spread out, and they kept growing and growing, and everybody was pushing for more and more, and we finally got to 100,000, and that was a milestone. And then all of a sudden, we got too many because we weren't taking enough out. But this is maintaining the herd, and the biologists have got this one right. They can fine tune that county by county, and they do an excellent job.
They do, and that's one thing that's kind of unique to Iowa is you see very few states nowadays manage on that county by county basis. A lot of times, they open it up for a statewide harvest, for instance, and there's a lot more work involved in managing on a county-by-county basis, but I truly think that it's the best way to do it because each county has a different deer populations, you know, so that's why it's important for them to get out and kind of know what's going on locally, and instead of putting a blanket across the whole state, you may have pockets here and there, like you said, where there are deer hot spots, mm-hmm. Where they cause more crop damage. So, yeah, again, that's it really is a success story here in Iowa.
You bet. It's been a goodie. Let's talk a little bit, changing gears. We'll get out of the upland and talk about boating a little bit. People are starting to get the boats out from the garage or the grove or wherever they store.
Yeah.
You've got some ideas for them.
Well, I do. You know, it's early on, and we'll cover this extensively in the more warmer shows here in the future, but it happens every year. You see people when they get a warm 60-70 degree day, can't help themselves, and who can blame them, and they hook up the boat and go out to the local lake. And just want to remind folks that there's, you know, some regulation requirements that you need to be mindful of before you hit the water. The number one thing to look at before you even hook up the boat, because you may be wasting your time by hooking it up, is to check to make sure that it has a valid registration on it. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that we sometimes, we hear every excuse in the book, but, you know, if it's not has a proper registration on it, it can't hit the water. So that's one thing that you want to make sure. After you have it registered, you want to make sure that you've got that registration on board the boat there somewhere so that it can be splayed if you're requested to look at that. Obviously, you want to kind of make a quick look at your registration numbering on the side. You want to make sure that, you know, it wasn't scuffed by hitting a dock, or it is readable, it's a contrasting color to the boat itself, and that it's in the proper format. So that's one thing that you need to definitely look at. You want to take a real quick glance at your vessel capacity plate, and it's usually located on the stern of the boat. Not only a good idea to do that to make sure that you have one, but also before you invite, you know, a couple of buddies and their 10 kids, you want to make sure that you're not over your capacity for that particular vessel. So that's one thing that you want to look at as well. And then probably one of the most important things is you want to make sure you got a life jacket on board for everybody. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in the haste, we see people forget about that, and they may have five people on board and three life jackets or four life jackets. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't want to be the guy in case of an emergency that doesn't have the life jacket. So I want to make sure that you've got one of those on board for everybody there. And if it's 16 feet or longer, you want to make sure that you have a throwable flotation device. That cushion, a lot of times, is what people think of when we request that. Mm-hmm. Also a fire extinguisher, very important item. And not only that you have the fire extinguisher, but, you know, last year, kind of as my first Iowa boating season, I saw some fire extinguishers pulled out that probably could have been sold on eBay as antiques. They were so old and rusty. So you want to make sure that you've got a fire extinguisher and one that works, that can be tested, that the gauge on there shows that it's good. And, if you've got a boat, you're also going to need to make sure you've got a horn or whistle or some sort of audible device in case you have some sort of an emergency. So those are just kind of the main ones that I wanted to go over. They're real quick and easy ones to kind of have on your checklist. But, you know, go to our website. You can pick up the handbook for Iowa boating laws and regulations that's there. You can get that at one of our offices. And a lot of times the licensed vendors sell them, or your county recorder. So okay. A lot of information in there, and make sure you look it over before you hit the water.
Sounds good. Hunter safety courses, there's a couple of those coming up. Red Oak is having one on April 1st, and Corning, the gun club down there, is having one on the 16th, and here in Cass County we'll have one later on late summer, early fall. So a couple of things, you can find out more about them by getting on the DNR website. So a lot of things we got covered, a lot of things going on, even though it is kind of in between seasons, there's still something happening in the great outdoors.
Always.
For the Lyman Ag Supply Company and the Family Vision Center in Atlantic, this is Bob Evensy, along with Grant Jelly, the conservation officer for Cass and Adair Counties, on this morning's Conservation Report.